Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the region's only locally produced public affairs program. Every Saturday at this time, Bedford County Speaks introduces community leaders, interesting topics, and people making a difference in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is presented exclusively by News Talk 1310 WBFD. Now, here's your host, Lloyd Broach.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you. Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the weekly public affairs program of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Today's program is presented as a public service by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. That's Thomas, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I'll return in a moment with today's guests, Steve Worm and Steve Elliott, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Some time back, they did a survey and they found that lots of people who lived within a few miles of the Liberty Bell or the Statue of Liberty never visited either place. That happens around here, too. Just after the start of the French and Indian War, Bedford County became the gateway to the West with the opening of the Forbes Road, which we now call Route 30. In 1794, President George Washington had to come here to quell the Whiskey Rebellion. By 1913, the first transcontinental road for motor cars, the Lincoln Highway, was dedicated here, and the legendary Bedford Springs Resort still welcomes people from all over the world. With this kind of legacy, why keep it a secret? Spread the word about Bedford County, the history, the charm, and the regal Alleghenies. Bedford County, America's open door to the West.
Perhaps in the past on this program, you've heard me mention in passing that ham radio is really the primary reason I got into my profession. I'm going to be talking to some people here that know a lot about this subject, and we want to talk to them today for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's an interesting topic. Hundreds of thousands of people all over the world are involved with amateur radio by virtue of an amateur radio license, but also there is a promotion and a public service event coming up on the 24th of June and the 25th, where a bunch of ham radio operators in Canada and the United States are going to head to the fields and the mountains and God knows where else for something called Field Day. And we're going to talk to Steve and Steve about this. But first, let me introduce you to Steve Worm. In ham radio, ham operators know each other by their call signs. So I've got to identify Steve properly as KE3ZT. That's his ham radio call sign. So good morning, Steve, and thanks for taking the time to do this.
Good morning, Lloyd.
And we're also going to speak to the other Steve, Steve Elliott, whom you've heard on this radio program before, KA3UDR, and Steve lives in Man's Choice. So, Steve, thank you also for coming today.
Good morning, Lloyd.
These two gentlemen probably collectively have spent decades and decades and decades in this endeavor. Steve Worm is a United States Marine Corps veteran, where he worked in communications and equipment maintenance and repair. I believe, is that correct?
Just about everything.
Just about everything, okay. And Steve Elliott is a U.S. Marine Corps and U.S. Army veteran, also with an extensive experience in aircraft, helicopters, and communications, and we're going to let him tell you about that as well. So let me turn to Steve Worm first. Steve, what got you interested in your ham radio hobby?
I think it was just the thrill of hearing stations from very distant locations. I know when I was in Boy Scouts, to get an electrical merit badge, one of the things we made was what's called a cat's whisker radio receiver made with a crystal and a diode connected to a speaker, and that just amazed me and started me off. And later on, I got a receiver kit with three tubes in it when I was a teenager and built that. And once I got it up and running and a good antenna, it just brought the world into me, and it just amazed me. It still amazes me.
When was that? Circa what?
Circa mid-60s.
Okay. So do you think a young person could still build a crystal set?
I'm sure they can.
Yeah. Because everyone's interested in computers. We're going to talk about that in a second. Steve Elliott, you've been a ham also a long time. What got you interested in all of this?
Well, you know, it's similar to KE3ZT's story, but I'm a little bit older. Crystal set. My dad, I evidently had built a couple when he was younger, but we went out and traipsed along a railroad track and found a crystal that he said, this will do it. And we actually built one, a cat's hair and a our whisker and a crystal.
So you were like the real thing. I mean, Steve Worm did it with a diode, but God, you went out and mined your own crystal.
Yeah, my dad always picked one up
from the railroad track.
Dad, I evidently had done it before, but we got it working, and we put in a good ground system. We run an antenna from the house out to the barn. We lived in the country, had a small farm, and I'd pick up. I grew up in just outside Wilmington, Ohio, in Clinton County, Ohio, but WLW out of Cincinnati, and it would come in on it. You'd take the cat whisker and move it around on the crystal a little bit. And I think WLS, Chicago, there was a station out of New Orleans that would come in real good. And it just utterly amazed me. Then I wasn't very old. I purchased a Zenith transoceanic shortwave receiver off a guy. And my dad thought that was one of the greatest finds I ever made.
You must have been rich. Those were good radios.
Oh, well, that was. I really feel bad that I ever parted with that thing. But
I always liked the name. You know, the name is tremendous.
Oh yeah,
transoceanic. Yeah. You know?
But I'd listen to shortwave station and ham radio operators. As for they got on single sideband, so you could hear them on AM. And I said, oh, this is really great. And I was out at this farmer's baling some hay away one time. And I looked up on a rafter in the barn. And I said, what's that? And he said, some kind of a transmitter my son built. I think it was a night cat. And had a crystal for 10 meters. And I knew a guy that was a ham radio operator running a TV radio repair shop, Vernon Kier. And I said, well, listen, if you're going to listen on your transoceanic and talk on this transmitter, and I could put out 25 watts, and the transformer, man, when you keyed it, it would hum and kind of vibrate on the desk, but it was kind of neat to watch, and the tubes would turn blue. Is you need a dial key relay, and basically that just kept from blowing up the receiver when you transmitted. And so I just started talking to people, and then they'd say, wait a minute, I missed your call sign. I'm thinking, oh.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, we're going to move on past this illegal operation.
But I did get a call sign. But
I knew you did get a call sign eventually. We're going to get back to that, we promise. Our guests today are Steve Worm, amateur call sign KE3ZT, and Steve Elliott, KA3UDR. Gentlemen, we're talking about ham radio here and, of course, the early days. But Steve Worm, what is it like today? I mean, you know, we were talking about crystal sets and old tube-type radios and so forth, but what attracts people today? The same thing, you think, the magic?
Well, the magic and the allure of talking into a microphone and hearing somebody come back to you from Australia or England or France, I think it's neat. But I think my wife, Rose, hit the nail on the head not too long ago. She said, it's almost like Facebook, which brings people together, only it's all voice. Or Morse code, if you're into Morse code, or teletype. There's so many different options on it. And it just goes back to, well, the earliest days of civilization. People sat around the campfire. That was their big get-together. Amateur radio brought the world together, our electronic campfire.
Do you think, though, that what makes it different from Facebook is that the communications are as a result of your own personal individual effort? There's no Google out there to help you. There's no large infrastructure in between you and the person you're speaking with. Would you feel that's an important part of it?
Well, for me, the technical challenge. Yeah. You can't always talk to England or Australia, and just the technical challenge of being able to do it sometimes is just a thrill.
And you're doing it with apparatus that you yourself put together, with the antennas you yourself put up, and the same with the guy in Australia or wherever he is.
Right. Well, antennas. Pretty much nowadays, there's not that many people that build their own radios. Right. You can still do it, but it's rather complicated and time-consuming. But to build a good antenna and talk to somebody in Australia, that's a thrill.
You know, I used to think that too, that someone couldn't build their own radios today, but I was reading some very interesting material prior to this program about some young boys, 13, 14, 15 years old, that built a station in 1923 in New Haven, Connecticut, and they were the first people, not just kids, but the first people to talk to other amateur operators across the Atlantic Ocean. It was called the Transatlantic Test, and it was sponsored by a radio club up in New Haven, and the call sign was 1BCG, and we just celebrated their anniversary not so many years ago. And these guys were all 14 and 15 years old, and they were so far ahead of the technology of the time, which it was absolutely extraordinary. So, I don't know, we read about the computer kids today. You know, they're the geniuses that are coming up with this stuff, not old guys like us. At least I don't think so. What do you think, Steve Elliott? Do you think there's some credence in that?
Oh, we still have young people that marvel me. They are using the computer chips, and it's unreal some of the stuff they'll come up with. And then they'll say, we can show you and teach you how to do this. I said, no, I'm too old. Go ahead. But it just amazes me that people can do some of the things that's happening. So it's not dead. And it's just exciting to see the young people get into it and some of the stuff that they can bring to the hobby. It really is.
Well, we've seen evidence of this in previous field day promotions that we've done here at the Bedford County Amateur Radio Club. In fact, I want to talk a bit about B-cars. Steve Moore, maybe you can explain what the Bedford County Amateur Radio Society is, and that's our local group here in Bedford, is it not?
Yes, it is. It's a group of amateur radio operators that get together to have fun, yeah. Basically. But we do have a serious side in that, and I'm sure Steve Elliott would want to talk about this, providing, in the event of emergency, the Amateur Radio Emergency Service or Radio Amateur Communications Emergency Service.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They sound the same, but they're two different things. And it's an important aspect of ham radio to provide for things in emergency.
Well, Steve, you're an appointed official by the ARRL, Organization for Ham Radio, and I believe your job is called Emergency Coordinator. So what does that entail for this club, this B-Cars club?
Well, actually, we do a lot of practicing for emergencies, and thanks to Steve for that, but in public service events. He might want to talk about that later, but I do as the Emergency Communications Officer for Bedford County. We work with other EECs throughout the state and throughout the country, throughout the world, actually. We have people go to different countries with disasters, hurricanes, tornadoes, whatever, flooding, and set up communications. And we can relay traffic back from their loved ones back to people here in this area. We also have phone pads capabilities, and we can set up times and let them talk to people anywhere in the world. But the big thing is to practice and train for disasters, and then to work with other agencies to communicate. So someone has to work with them because everybody operates on different frequencies. So you need to coordinate to get the information from one unit to another. The Red Cross, CAP gets involved.
And most recently, you had an incident, I guess just about a year ago, where you and others of your emergency communications group actually assisted the Pennsylvania Emergency Management with this problem we had up on the turnpike during the snowstorm.
The snowmageddon, or whatever they call it.
Right,
I'll tell you what, being fairly close to the turnpike, we can monitor the turnpike frequencies. And we still use CB to talk to the truckers because you can get a lot of good information off the truckers. So they're out there. They don't operate CB a whole lot anymore, but if there's some kind of disaster or wreck or something on turnpike, they get on their CB radios. And so we got on HF frequency where we could communicate with Pima out of Harrisburg. We actually, being sent more central to the location, ended up primarily running their nets for them for the state of Pennsylvania.
So the Bedford County Amateur Radio Service and their emergency coordination through you actually ended up running the network for the state as the primary net control here in Bedford. So that was quite a feather in your cap.
Oh, that's correct. But we had some really, really good help. The members in Bedford County Amateur Radio Society, we never had any trouble with them stepping forward and just helping out and spending hours and hours on the radio or going out in the field to get information. Great bunch of people here. Matter of fact, we recently got our scores back. Every year they have a training exercise, simulated training exercise, emergency training. And in Pennsylvania, Bedford County rated second in the highest number of points earned during the simulated emergency training exercise. Erie, Pennsylvania beat us out, but they have way worse weather than we do, so they have a bigger group.
They're also across from another country. I saw that. I noticed that the other day. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Steve and Steve, and I'm glad you told us about this, Steve, because when we come back, we're going to be talking to Steve and Steve about an exercise that occurs every year at this time, and this year it's going to be on the 24th and 25th of June, called Field Day, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
USA in your Chevrolet.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. When I was a kid, every Sunday evening, Dinah Short sang that song. Being part of a Chevy family since 1939, I thought it was pretty special. Now that the weather has become Bedford beautiful again, why not stop by and see the USA in your Thomas Chevrolet? Right now, we have a great opportunity with a beautiful 2017 Malibu. All of them have the latest technology, comfort, and power to make driving fun again. At Thomas Chevrolet, you can drive away in one of these terrific Malibus at value pricing in the low 20s. When you get a great price, great trade-in, and our legendary service, that's called earning your complete satisfaction. That's what we do here every day. Come and see the USA in your Thomas Chevrolet right now. If you visit us this week, you'll find your 2017 Malibu in our showroom. And while you're here, we'll show you what complete satisfaction really is.
That's Thomas Chevrolet, where we guarantee your complete satisfaction every day.
This is Raymond Horner of the Bedford County Vietnam Veterans Association, and you are listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Now, let's head back to Lloyd Roach and Bedford County Speaks.
A couple things I want to mention. First of all, we are recording the program this morning at Hebrews, and they're always so gracious. They let me have this table by the window where we can look out the window on John and Pitt Street, and acoustically, it's always been a terrific place to produce the program. So I want to thank everybody at Hebrews Coffee Shop for being so nice to us, not to mention the terrific coffee and muffins they have here. I want to mention to you also that this program is brought to you in part by the Bedford County Chamber of Commerce, which proudly supports and celebrates the business community of the Bedford County region. To learn more, visit them online at bedfordcountychamber.com. And also, you may want to check out the brand new, super nifty, zillion-dollar clubhouse that has now just opened at the Omni Bedford Springs. If you haven't seen this place, it is awesome. Okay, so here we are, and we are speaking now about Field Day, which is an extension of all of this training we're talking about. Steve Worm, why did they even invent this Field Day? What was it about? Was it all about emergency communications or all the above?
It's probably all of the above. It combines public service, emergency preparedness, community outreach, and technical skills in one event. And it gets us out of our houses or our ham shacks, so to speak, out into a possibly a more hostile environment, which we might have to operate in an emergency. Across the country, there's people that go to some extraordinary places. Some will get a small radio in their tent and climb a mountain and operate from the mountain. Others will have a big tent city with multiple radios and antennas, and some have more modest, like the Bedford County Amateur Radio Society. We'll have three, maybe four different HF radios up and operating, and we're going to operate from a fixed location. This year we're simulating that we're supporting the Emergency Operations Center, so we're not going to be as austere as a lot, but still, we're going to be out and away.
Do they operate in their tents and everything, even when it rains?
Sure do.
and lightning and all that jazz?
Well, they may take their antennas down for lightning, but...
So I understand the point is to get into that not-so-pleasant or hostile environment and operate as scheduled so to prove that they can do it. And their equipment probably breaks, and they have to fix it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just a recent history. The hurricanes in New Orleans and the East Coast, for a while, regular communications in some locations were drastically eliminated or reduced, and the ham radio operators had to operate in the weather to provide sometimes emergency communications and, in the long run, health and welfare communications in and out of the affected zone, sometime in austere conditions.
Now, your role with the club is called activities director, and you recently had an activity, or if you will, a drill. I guess it was a run or a trail thing or something you did up north of here. Tell us about that.
It was the Huntington and Broadtop Township Rails to Trails Triathlon, a canoe boat segment, a run segment, and a bicycle segment. We provided people along the route and at different turnaround points just to keep track of who was going where and feed that information back to the headquarters of the triathlon.
Steve Ellen, let me turn to you about this. We mentioned just briefly a second ago that maybe the primary difference between the ham operators and some of the others that help us, such as the GMRS guys and the CB operators, is we're able to fix and maintain this stuff.
I'm not one of them, but boy, we do.
No, I think you are, Steve.
We have some really good. Well, actually, KB3DFZ, John's one of the best guys in the area, and we're lucky to have him in the group. We're capable of putting an antenna up, and it makes a difference how high you go for the antenna, how far you want to talk, but we can build antennas, get them up, repair them, make minor repairs on radios quite rapidly. The biggest thing is we do these field days, and we do practice running off of gasoline-powered generators, solar panels, and different forms of emergency power, and which is a must-needed thing in a lot of disasters. And then you got to realize in almost any disaster, you're going to lose your phone service for 3 days. It'll become overwhelmed, and then the government will take a good portion of the cell phone band for their personal use. Nevertheless, leaves amateur radio as the only form of reliable communications in these events.
Our guests today are Steve Worm, whose amateur call sign is KE3ZT, and Steve Elliott, KA3UDR. Both are members and officials with the Bedford County Amateur Radio Society, and we are talking today about the field day exercise that is coming up. So, Steve Worm, give us kind of a little picture of what it's going to look like on field day. What happens? What are we going to see?
Not much.
Yes, you are, Steve. And you're going to tell us.
Well, you'll see some radio operators sitting around a radio. I think we're going to have at least four radios operating on four different bands, mostly voice. I think we're going to have one Morse code operator. I'm not sure if we'll do any digital, but we might do some digital or teletype. And hopefully we're going to have what's called a get-on-the-air station. So any guests that show up to our field day site, if they want to, they can make a contact with whoever shows up on the other end of the microphone.
So if they have a ham license, they can just come over and get on the air?
They don't need a ham license.
They don't need a ham license. Tell me about that.
The amateur radio rules, FCC Part 97, allows us as control operators to let someone else sit in and operate the radio and talk to someone else, as long as there's a licensed control operator present.
So that gives you an opportunity, if you've never seen any of these operations, to get over. And this is on the 24th and 25th, and your location is going to be up near Bedford Springs, I understand.
That's right.
All right, great.
It's called the Get on the Air Station, but I kind of refer to it as a try before you buy.
Right.
Come on out, try one if you like it.
Now, Steve Elliott, If you guys are on your field day station up there in Bedford Springs, and you're in your tent or your hut or whatever you're in, are you talking to other field day stations? Is that how it works?
It's a contest. Pretty well count on every amateur radio club in the United States. in Canada, being on the air, trying to collect points to win the contest. Most people are there for the food, I think. But anyhow, we do have a great time. Steve spoke earlier, four stations on four different bands. And when you get into emergency communications, as opposed to the military, being in the Marine Corps and the Army, but they give you a frequency, a band in that band, and you're pretty well locked there. As the sun rises and the sun sets, bands will change a little bit due to conditions. And amateur radio operators learn to utilize the different bands at different times of the day to make communications. Whereas military, PEMA, FEMA, they can't do that. They're locked into a frequency. So that gives the amateur radio operators a lot of leeway to assist people in communications. We have that ability where no one else actually does. As you work with government agencies, you realize that they guard their frequencies like rocks. And several years ago, a guy working for the CIA realized that the CIA, the FBI, and all these other alphabet agencies could not talk to each other and would not let each other on their frequency. So they come up with what is called a shared frequency. But even then, that shared frequency had its drawbacks because they had to go to the shared frequency, which may not work at the particular time of day they wanted to utilize it.
Right. So, Steve Worm, we have just a few minutes left, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about how you become a ham operator.
Well, it's a limited training course. We call it a ham cram. It's essentially a self-study, a guided self-study, if you will, period, that we set up for prospective hams to come in and go through the questions and learn the answers. It's a lockstep system where there's 400, 700 questions, depending on which license class you're mm-hmm. going for, and the answers are published. We give them an opportunity to read the book, learn the answers, and if they have questions, we'll help them out before they take a test. And then we move into the testing phase where at the entry level, a technician class licensee would take a test of 35 questions and required to pass at least 79 of those, or get corrects, mm-hmm. 29 of those right. for a passing grade.
Well, it's like anything else, even in commercial licenses, it's always an entry level point. I mean, you're not an expert after you pass your test. You become an expert later as a result of experience. So this allows people to get their license and join you guys to learn what they need to learn.
Learn a little bit more, yeah, right. practice it. Yeah. You still have, with recent rule changes, you have almost the same privileges. There's just a few bands where an entry-level technician cannot right. operate. But it's pretty close where they can operate across the spectrum, whereas 10, 20 years ago, it was very restricted for the incoming novice class, which is no longer in existence.
Well, let me remind you, this day when you come up and do all this is the 24th and 25th of June. And if you want to learn more about this, go to the club's website, which is bcars.org. The location of the field day organization will be there, as well as the dates and the time. And as Steve Worm said, you can come over and maybe operate the GOTA station, which I think is Get on the Air. And Steve Elliott and Steve Worm, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. You guys have been great. Did I miss anything here?
Well, we are doing a testing station at field day okay. for anyone talk. Interested. Good. We could work with people to cram on that. And one important thing about it, once you get a license, you need to get on the air and get involved with the other hams in order to develop. Right. Otherwise, you're just stagnant. And that's the reason we lose people that get a license. They don't get on the air real quick.
Well, that's part of what they have to do. They have to get in and participate. And again, Steve, thank you very much. I appreciate taking the time to do this. And good luck to you on your field day this year. Bedford County Speaks was presented this morning by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right on Route 220 in Bedford, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I look forward to joining you next time right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, enjoy your weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
Thanks for listening to Bedford County Speaks. This program is heard every Saturday at this time over News Talk 1310 WBFD. If you would like to hear this program again, visit bedfordcountyspeaks.com and click Listen Here. Bedford County Speaks is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310. If you or your organization would like to appear on the show, visit our website, bedfordcountyspeaks.com, for contact information. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.